Divided we fall.
Unity, please don't desert me.
Welcome, one and all.
Sweetest honey from the honeybee. Unity. Unity.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Finny Eastwood Show. Without Will. On American Freedom Radio and the Vinny Eastwood Show. com. Boy, there's a lot of news breaking over this weekend. I cannot believe it. Seriously, listen up. Guerrillamedia.co.nz, I've just posted upwards of two dozen articles, only three of which I have time to read out to you before we have our first guest after the break. SIS bill submissions to be kept secret from the public. Now, those of you in the United States who don't know this, who are already having your freedoms taken off you, don't worry, we're going to join you soon. It turns out that Parliament's security intelligence services are going to be granted a whole new raft of powers, apparently, with regards to enforcement over the Rugby World Cup. Because obviously, with a whole bunch of drunk people, you know, being the main security threat at the Rugby World Cup, you obviously need to give your intelligence services powers to invade people's homes, privacy, and obviously look at their computers and track and trace everybody wherever they go. That's right. Thank you very much. And not to mention, nobody is allowed to know what's in this bill. Nobody is allowed to hear any criticism of the bill, and nobody, I bet you, will ever even get to read it before it's too late. You know, welcome to the New World Frickin' Order, New Zealand style. On top of that, we have a terrible free trade deal that's going to be signed, and I'm sure that everybody who remembers NAFTA, GATT and the European Trading Union and the European Economic Community will all understand just how much of a moronic idea that is. And apparently, and this is the article here in Guerrilla Media, free trade gives power over New Zealand policy for 100 years, is according to Jane Kelsey, a law professor at Auckland University. And my thoughts on this. Is that it's precisely the same thing that's been happening all over the rest of the place. Basically, bankers will just set up this fabulous little community where everything that governs your life will be privatized and you won't have anything you can say about it for at least until you're dead. And again, the public doesn't know jack about it. Isn't that lovely? They're going to make a new Asian union, I'm betting, and it's going to be incorporated fabulously enough into the new world order. You're listening to the Vinny Eastwood Show on American Freedom Radio at thevinnyeastwoodshow.com, and we'll be right back. Coming at you live It's the Vinny Eastwood Show without Will. on American Freedom Radio. Now, I just wanted to actually flesh out this SIS bill submissions to be kept secret from the public. This is dated December 6th, coming out of the New Zealand Herald, one of our prominent newspapers here. Interesting point about them. They used to have 95 investigative journalists a couple of years ago. Now they have 5. And most of their articles come out of the Associated Press and Reuters. But this one they wrote themselves. Parliament's Security and Intelligence Committee will hear public submissions in secret on a bill that strengthens the laws covering the SIS, or Security Intelligence Services, our version of the CIA-holes, Prime Minister John Key says. Mr. Key introduced the bill today, saying the legislation hadn't been updated for 40 years and the SIS needed laws that were relevant to the global security environment in which it operated, i.e. being completely networked with other intelligence agencies worldwide who are part of a global control grid who want to enslave everybody. It updates the warrants frameworks, basically meaning that the Prime Minister can sign off on a warrant of anybody he likes, especially around electronic tracking devices and computer surveillance and technology like mobile phones and cyber identities. Mr. Key, our fabulous ex-Merrill Lynch, ex-Federal Reserve, ex-financial terrorist, said it did not change the threshold for surveillance warrants, apart from the fact that he personally, with no oversight, mind you, can sign them off. And he did not expect a change in the number of domestic warrants issued each year, which at present ranges from 11 to 15. He said the committee would call for public submissions on the bill after it had been given its first reading on Thursday. The public can make their point to the committee in person and in writing, he said, and they said that they will also be heard in private. Mr. Key said he didn't know whether there was a precedent for that, but those who made submissions would be free to publish them if they wanted to. It won't be in the public interest to have it open for a whole bunch of reasons I don't want to go into, he said. Yeah, that's right. It's really bad to let the public know just how much of their civil liberties are being eroded, isn't it, Mr. Key? For F's sake. Mr. Key said that while submitters could make their submissions public, the interchange between them and the committee members needed to be in closed session. It is within Parliament's rules for that to happen and is up to the committee to decide whether to hold open hearings. And this is the first secret hearing that I've ever heard of. But that doesn't mean that they've never happened before. It just means, well, they were secret. And Mr. Key is the chairman of the committee, and its members are Deputy Prime Minister Bill English, Labour leader Phil Goff, and representatives of minor parties. I wonder if Keith Locke from the Green Party is actually going to be in there. Speaking at us, who is openly critical of the bill, seeing as he himself, whilst in Parliament, was surveilled and kept under tabs by the Security Intelligence Services at the behest of God knows who. Speaking at his post-cabinet press conference, Mr. Key said that for reasons of national security, he did not intend going into detail on why the SIS needed the legislative update, but next year's Rugby World Cup was one of them. Hey, wait a second, that must have been a Freudian slip there. It's the Rugby World Cup. It's just fabulous when you have big events, you can just make excuses and just pass legislation to erode everybody's civil liberties. Isn't that wonderful? We obviously need to make sure that we provide all the national security that is appropriate, he said. Yeah, because obviously a person that's a little bit drunk is obviously a danger to our way of life, considering that we have one of the highest rates of alcohol abuse in the developed world. We're not predicting instability, but we have the right... But we have to have the right legislation in place. That's right. And indeed, more draconian legislation off the back of this as well. Did you know that if you wear a T-shirt that has a beer logo or any company logo whatsoever, and you are within a certain radius of any of the games, you can be arrested? If you are wearing a Budweiser T-shirt and Budweiser's not a sponsor and you haven't been paid to wear that T-shirt, you're going to go to frickin' jail. I wonder what's going to happen to me when I show up with my camera and my Guerrilla Media T-shirt. I'm sure there'll be some interesting fun. But I'm not sure I actually want to test them, really, because I don't like being arrested. Been arrested twice, and both times the worst times of my life. Not keen on repeating that performance. But John Key said part of the reason for updating the bill was that the SIS needed specific laws, not general ones. From a legal perspective, this is driven by the fact that developments in case law means there is an expectation for any search and seizure by state agencies to be supported by express provisions in legislation, he said. Those laws already covered the police and customs, and the SIS was being brought into line with them. The Green Party said the World Cup was being used as an excuse to extend these powers, and the main security problem for the World Cup will be drunken fans, which is best dealt with by restricting the supply of alcohol, not restricting our civil liberties, said MP Keith Locke. And it's a pity there wasn't any advance public consultation on the proposed changes. The SIS culture of secrecy at all costs prevented this. And I don't like secret proceedings at all. Namely, because they're not available for any description of scrutiny. Now, I have a theory. This is, of course, not substantiated. It may well be true, but I don't know. We've recently had a bit of a kerfuffle with a thing called Search and Surveillance Bill, where up to 70 different agencies will be given basically open slather to violate everybody's civil rights. They can come into your house without a warrant, surveil you and install cameras and everything for up to 3 days without a warrant. And after 3 days, they have to go to a magistrate and say, oh, yes, we found something, or, oh, no, we didn't find anything, and they can continue surveilling you. Anyway, I think that the heat, and in my opinion, there hasn't been anywhere near enough as there should be, generated by the Search and Surveillance Bill, has prompted the government to introduce this new SIS bill and pass it in secret so that it can be done without the public's knowledge, the precise same laws that they were going to be doing in open, transparent ways, which were bailed with criticism. That's what I think. I could be wrong. Certainly hope I am. And also I wanted to ring out Keith Locke's comments on this SIS powers as well. The Rugby World Cup is being used as an excuse for extending the powers of the Security Intelligence Services, he said. In Parliament today, John Key introduced legislation to amend the New Zealand Security Intelligence Services Act. In the accompanying regulatory impact statement, the government says it wants the Act amended in time to effective security operations for the Rugby World Cup 2011. It's from Keith Locke, Member of Parliament. Once again, the Rugby World Cup is being used to bring in laws which erode our civil liberties, said Mr. Locke, the Green Party's security and intelligence, the intelligence and security spokesperson. Two previous bills, the Major Events Management Bill and the Rugby World Cup Bill, also contained provisions offensive to basic human rights. And of course, with our one House of Parliament and no oversight, no checks and balances, all of this stuff can be passed just like that. And he said the main security problem of the World Cup will be drunken fans, which is best dealt with by restricting the supply of alcohol, not restricting our civil liberties. New Zealanders should be worried that proposed changes give the SIS power to covertly intercept communications, invade computers, and put tracking devices on people's cars. Because obviously, dangerous drunkards need their cars surveilled just in case they get into a wee accident. Never mind the ridiculously large quantities of alcohol checkpoints that we have going around our cities all day and all night, all the freaking time, when everybody's being stopped, most people aren't even drunk, or whatever. The Green Party will judge each specific proposal on the bill on its merits. It is a pity there wasn't any advance public consultation on the proposed changes. The SIS culture of secrecy at all costs prevented us. That in from greens.org.nz. And, you know, I'm not a green lover or anything like that, because I know that both the words green, environmentalism, and progressive is interchangeable with communist. Speaking of communism, this other article in here about the free trade gives power over New Zealand policy for 100 years. It's written by Owen Hembry. The Trans-Pacific Trade Negotiations continue in Auckland today, aimed at hammering out broad economic alliances between 9 countries representing more than half a billion people. Negotiations are aimed at expanding the Trans-Pacific Strategic Economic Partnership Agreement between New Zealand, Singapore, Chile, Brunei, to include new members, the United States, Australia, Peru, Vietnam and Malaysia. Stephen Jacoby, Executive Director of the NZUS Council, said the scope of the talks was much broader than a conventional free trade agreement because it's a free, it's a, what was it, enslaved agreement. In reality, the way business is being done today is not just about trade, export and import. It's being done through investment, strategic alliances, and particularly through supply chains, Jacoby said, notably monopolistic corporations restricting supply chains so that anybody who's part of a free nation's economy or trying to actually do business in an honest and open way gets driven right out of the market so that the only people that actually benefit from any free trade deals are open, big, fat, globalist, scumbag corporations who don't give two flying Fs about sovereignty or justice or any semblance of giving the public a say and what happens to their nations who are being very rapidly enslaved. I suppose those who have concerns about this agreement are right when they say that this has the potential to go quite deep into domestic policy settings, he said. It has to do so because these days we've got a much more dynamic business environment in which we're operating. The dynamic business environment, which means that business can now take over state assets and indeed, more to the point, state governments. But they don't care, really, do they? Now, we have a very special guest coming up on the line from the Tanglewood Wellness Centre. If we can bring him up to talk about a little bit of organic food and permaculture and various other things. Lauren, are you there?
Hello.
Hello, welcome to the show. Lauren, can you hear me? Lauren, are you there? Having a little bit of a problem with his mic there. Difficulties can always happen in live radio, but we'll try and sort this out as soon as we can. Go ahead and speak, Lauren. We can hear you now. Hello? It's very unfortunate. We'll see if we can actually get him up on the phone. Now, it's unfortunate. Terrible, terrible things going on here.
Hello.
Lauren, is that you? We can hear you now.
It is me, yeah. Sorry about that.
Oh, fabulous, fabulous. How's it going, buddy?
It's going well. It's going well. It's been a crazy afternoon trying to get into the city so I can make this call.
It's a difficulty. Now, would you please preface for myself as well as the listeners who you are and what you're all about, buddy?
Absolutely. I'm Lauren Lockman. I run the Tanglewood Wellness Center, just about 75 miles outside of Panama City, Panama. And what we do is we help people create incredibly high levels of health. Basically, what we're all about is teaching people how to function at the highest level possible, as well as how to live on the earth as gently as possible.
Sounds about right. Now, I believe you have courses available where you actually teach people to do all these kinds of things. And one of these courses, which I have a particular interest in, is permaculture. What is permaculture?
Sure. Permaculture is basically about taking our way of growing food, agriculture, and in fact, more than that, it's about the way of organizing everything in ways that imitate what happens in nature. You know, in nature there are patterns and there are way things happen and there are natural systems. And when we go into nature and create, for instance, if we look at the agricultural model, which is typically acres and acres or hectares and hectares, if that's your language, of monocrops, we're creating something that never happens in nature, and it's really dysfunctional. It just doesn't work. It winds up depleting the soil until you've got something that's you can't even grow food on it. And that's the reason why conventional farmers have to use tons per acre of fertilizers and pesticides, because the nutrients aren't in the soil, hence the fertilizers. And because the nutrients aren't in the soil, they wind up with plants that are so weak that they're destroyed by pests, and so they need the pesticides. When you're using permaculture, you're doing things in a very different way that imitate what happens in nature. And so you're planting, it's companion planting, it's using various species that work well together, and planting food forests that imitate natural forests, where instead of a whole bunch of one thing, you might have 20 or 30 or 50 or 100 different species of plants, all of which you've put in to benefit from, but they're all working in unison and creating a healthy ecosystem.
And how can people do this kind of thing in their backyards?
They can, absolutely. Permaculture is basically a philosophy that works in virtually any environment, any climate at all. You know, there are places where you would think, well, you can't really do much there. And I'll give you an example. In Jordan, in the Middle East, just a few miles east of the Dead Sea, you're looking at the lowest place on Earth. You're looking at soil that is totally arid and totally salty. And salty soil won't grow food, or at least that's the belief. Well, about 5 or 6 years ago, a permaculture team went in there, and they had to irrigate at first. They had to irrigate to get the whole thing started. But now it's 5 or 6 years old, and they've created a completely self-sustaining ecosystem that literally grows tons of food. And this is in a place that nobody thought you could grow anything.
Wow, that's pretty amazing.
It is amazing.
I find what's happening with our current farming practices is they're kind of leaching nutrients out of the soil, and in so yes. doing, none of the nutrients really make its way into the fruit and the vegetables. In New Zealand, one of our most famous orange growing, you know, it's like the California of New Zealand, is called Keri Keri, who's famous uh-huh. for Keri Keri oranges. A friend of mine, who I was looking after her autistic child for a while, and she told me that all the oranges that come out of Keri Keri no longer have vitamin C. You're listening yeah. to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. My very special guest is from Tanglewood Wellness Center in Panama, and we'll be right back after the break.
Some kind of way out of here, said a joker to the thief. There's too much confusion, I can't get no relief.
No relief out there.
Drink my wine, plow and dig my earth.
We're back. Coming at you live from the dark side of the globe, from the fabulous fortress fluoride head paradise of New Zealand. It's the Vinnie Eastwood, it's the Vinnie Eastwood Show without Will on American Freedom Radio. My very special guest, Lauren Locke, is coming at us live from Tanglewood Wellness Centre. Welcome back, mate.
Thank you.
Now, of recent times, we've had some somewhat draconian legislation being passed, like SR51. Have you heard of this one?
Yes, absolutely.
What's your understanding of this bill?
Well, my understanding is that like many of the bills that come through the U.S. Congress, there's lots of vague language, which means potentially years or decades of arguing about what things actually mean, but that potentially the language could be interpreted to mean that the growing of all food could be legislated by the U.S. government, which means it could be made illegal for you or I to grow a tomato in our backyard.
Oh, mate. Well, it's I totally agree with that, because hell, you can't allow people to grow their own food. After all, they develop some description of independence. And you need them to be social, and you need them to be socialized into government control if you want to enslave them. I mean, jeepers,
yes.
It's elementary.
Yes, exactly. It is elementary, and I think you probably would agree that's probably why chemtrails exist, and that's probably why fluoridation of water exists, and that's probably why this legislation has been pushed through. And I think, unfortunately, many people, probably not your listeners, but many people out there really have no clue to just how precarious their situation is.
Yeah, totally. I remember I was speaking to a Texan the other night who's visiting here in New Zealand as a traveling photographer, who just loves George Bush, loves naked body scanners, loves the Patriot Act, loves all this. They're just keeping us safe, man. You know, once you got against freedom.
Well.
You know. Brainwashing. It's so frustrating, isn't it? Because if you know the truth and somebody starts spouting out all these lies that they're repeating, and they don't understand the lies that they're being given, obviously. They don't even have more than 2 degrees of information to back up the lie. like the main lies.
That's right. I think unfortunately, Vinny, lots of people are actually going through life basically asleep.
Really
not even conscious of what's happening at all. Just as you say, just parroting the lies they're being told and believing everything they hear from the government.
Yeah. And they don't research into the lies at all, you know. It's just like, no, but this lie says this and this, you know.
Right, that's right.
Yep. You know, there's I think there's a general lack of understanding, and I can attribute a lot of this to our diets.
Yes, no doubt about it. When the body is toxic, we cease to think very clearly. You know, not only do we cease to function very well, and not only do we wind up virtually ensuring our future incidence of cancer, heart disease, stroke, diabetes, arthritis, you know, what have you. And the list goes on and on. Those things are virtually guaranteed for anybody who's still following a conventional diet. But way beyond that, you lose the ability to think very clearly. And of course, you know, people who are listening and eating a conventional diet may argue at this point, because unfortunately they can't really know. But we've been, for a long time now, we've been offering people a virtual guarantee. And I say virtual because I can't, unless I go home with each client and see what they're actually doing, you know, there's no way to know what's happening from that end. But when people, and let me interrupt myself. We had a 4-month internship program for a long time and took 117 people through it, I think, over the course of about 10 years. It's now a 9-week program, and so it's very different what we're able to see, because over 17 weeks, when people started out fasting with us for 21 days, and that is going to shock a lot of people. I can come back to that. 21 days drinking only water. What happens is your body cleanses itself and heals itself to an extent that most people really can't understand is even possible. We see literal miracles all the time, things that just aren't supposed to happen. When they do that, when they get their body functioning as efficiently as is possible, and then follow it up by making the optimal lifestyle choices, putting only the foods in their bodies that belong in their body, getting enough sunlight, getting only, you know, pure air as much as they can manage, getting exercise every day, what happens is they begin to function at a level that, you know, again, if they've ever functioned at that level, it's been a long time, and most people never imagined they can get back to it. And unfortunately, because we lose these facilities little by little, you know, I hear this all the time. People will talk to me and say, yeah, in fact, this just happened the other night. Someone said to me, my brother died. I said, I'm so sorry. What happened? Well, he had colon cancer. And the thing was, he was as healthy as possible, right? And I mean, people say this all the time, not understanding that you don't go to bed healthy and wake up dead with colon cancer. It takes 20 or 30 years to develop most of these chronic diseases that are killing most of our people now. And so, you know, people are not healthy. They're actually walking disease factories. They just don't know it. they haven't been diagnosed yet, and so they imagine that they're okay. And because these things sneak up on you little by little, most people have no way of knowing how well they could function. But I've seen it over and over again because we've taken so many people. We've actually taken thousands of people through the fasting process. But, you know, again, 117 of them actually spent 4 months with me or more, because some of them actually did two internships back to back, or some of them stayed on to work, or some of them stayed on to volunteer. So we have a chance to see what happens for people. And without exception, every single person experiences miraculous results, and it winds up creating this level of health that they never thought they could enjoy.
And on the subject of cancer, an article just came out yesterday, I believe. Oh, no, actually on the 3rd of December from Mercola.com. Proof cancer is man-made. Fossil evidence of cancer. A study of ancient bodies has determined that cancer is a man-made disease, one fueled by the excesses. Tumors turn out to be extremely rare until very recent times when pollution and poor diet became issues.
Exactly, yeah.
So when you tell me that cancer, and there's actually a lot of evidence to back this up, cancer is the number one killer of mankind currently, or at least in the Western world anyway. I'm not 100% sure about all the other people that are living in grass huts and whatnot in Africa are affected by this. I'm sure starvation would be more of a killer for them. But with our society, we've just gotten so sick, and it's all by design.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's not necessarily not all disease is being inflicted on us by the government, but we're inflicting it on ourselves unknowingly. You know, in fact, the truth is that cancer and heart disease and diabetes and arthritis and lower GI tract problems and lots of other things, these diseases have always existed in mankind. But what's true is that 1,000 years ago, they were exceptionally rare because only a few people were wealthy enough to be able to consistently overeat the way everybody does today. And it's a combination of overeating and eating poorly. If they were eating only the best foods, maybe it wouldn't be an issue. But, you know, back 1,000 years ago, only the kings and the wealthiest noble people could afford to eat highly processed white flour and sugar and lard and all this garbage. Today, unfortunately, that's available to everybody. And so these diseases have become widespread when, poor people used to be healthier because they simply couldn't afford to overconsume.
It's terrible, man. Well, how exactly is the average person supposed to walk around? Because in my experience, let's say you walk into a supermarket, walk into a 7-Eleven, or any description of food conveyance, whether it be fast food or a supermarket, it's like all the stuff that's supposed to be good for you doesn't have any nutrients, and all the stuff that people eat on the majority have extra added poisons. So if you're trying to remove toxicity from the body, it's virtually impossible. And if you're trying to avoid toxins coming into your body, it's doubly impossible, right?
Well, no, I don't agree with you. I don't think either of those things is impossible. I think they're challenging, and the biggest challenge is that people don't know what to do. If you know what to do, it's actually not that hard. I mean, we've been doing it over and over again and have done it now thousands of times with different people. You know, I don't want to spend too much time on this. It's probably not that interesting. But I came into this myself because 27 years ago, I graduated from college and within 6 months got very sick. And all I knew of at the time was conventional medicine. Well, conventional medicine made me worse over the course of 3 years. And it finally occurred to me that if I was going to get well, I was going to have to take matters into my own hands. And so the first thing I thought was, well, you know, maybe what I need to do is figure out what's natural to eat, what should actually go in my body. Because, you know, some of you listening may not have thought of this before, but if it comes in a box or a package or a cellophane bag or what have you, it's not natural. Your body was never designed to consume that. There is a natural diet for every species on the planet, and humans are no different. Anything that's processed or packaged doesn't belong in the body, and if you consume it, it will create issues. It will create problems for you. So the first thing for anybody to do if they're interested in their health is to stop consuming that stuff. And, you know, again, many of the things that most people think are healthy for them, for instance, whole grain breads, you know, for some people still think pasta is a health food. What else? Even cooked vegetables. These things are not really healthy. When you cook anything, you actually eliminate, you destroy most of the nutritional value and create toxic compounds. So when I said earlier, I'm sorry, go ahead, Vinny.
Well, the Japanese figured that out a while ago, which is why they eat a lot of raw fish and raw vegetables. But interestingly enough, Western world doesn't eat many raw foods really at all, with the exception of sometimes the occasional piece of fruit. But interestingly, I heard this from my executive producer, that in Japan, the reason why they have wasabi on the fish is that it kills all the possible bacteria on it and keeps all the nutrients fresh.
Well, that's interesting. I wasn't aware of that. And, you know,
same reason in the Western world that we pour lemon all over our fish and then eat it raw.
Mm-hmm. When that happens, when that rarely happens, but and there's lots of viewpoints on this. The first thing I'd like to point out to people with regard to consuming animal products is that the animals on the planet that consume other animals have very different systems than we do. Everything from the teeth, the way the jaw works, the digestive enzymes secreted in the mouth, the length, shape of the digestive tract itself is completely different than ours. Our systems, of course, are almost exactly the same as our closest primate relatives, the great apes. And the great apes eat almost exclusively fruit and soft, tender, leafy greens. There is, of course, some insect consumption, both accidental and some purposeful. And in the case of chimpanzees, by far the most violent of the primates, they will occasionally, according to Diane Leakey, who, as you know, I'm sure, studied them for more than 30 years, she said that it's not unusual for them to eat flesh no more than once every 6 months or so, a couple times a year. So it played a tiny, tiny role in their diet. The fact is that we are designed to eat fruit and soft, tender, leafy greens just like these other animals. And that's reflected by the way our digestive tract works from one end to the other. Now, the thing is, most people would think, well, yeah, but how can you possibly get everything you need that way? How can you get, you know, where's the protein? And the fact is, the protein is the building block of living cell tissue. So if something is alive or was ever alive, it contains protein. And a healthy, clean, efficient system can take up to 75% of its protein needs from within the body. Now, if you think about this, I mean, every day your body is breaking down hundreds of millions of cells and building hundreds of millions of new ones. But it's not, you know, the body's the most intelligent thing on the planet. It's not just going to throw everything away. It's going to reuse whatever it can. And so we're literally recycling the proteins. They get broken down. The amino acids go back into the bloodstream, and the body is able to pull the amino acids that it needs out of the bloodstream as it needs them. And so for 19 years, in fact, last week, as you know, in the U.S., celebrated Thanksgiving last week. And
We'll get into that just after the break. My very special guest from Tanglewood Wellness Center is Lauren Locke. You're listening to The Vinnie Eastwood Show at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com, and we'll be right back after the short break.
Black sunrise, shadow coming over the sky. Black sunrise, always gonna be a surprise, 'cause we don't know.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, without Will, on American Freedom Radio, and incidentally, the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. And my very special guest is Lauren Lockman. I've been getting that incorrect first time. Does that happen a lot, Lauren?
It does. it does.
Okay, cool, because I'm just as moronic as everybody else. Yeah. Now, we have to talk. You were going to go on about fasting. Yeah, you've been having some remarkable success doing this with people.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it comes down to, you were talking about how it's impossible to detoxify completely. And it's certainly not easy given that the world has become a very toxic place. But every species on the planet, virtually every single one, when sick enough or badly enough injured, will lay down and stop eating. And the reason that happens is because processing food through to the digestive tract requires roughly 50% of the organism's energy, and we're no different. So when your body has serious cleansing or healing work to do, you know, it's interesting. We get sick, we lose our appetite, but we're all brainwashed to believe we should be eating anyway to keep up our strength. The fact is the best thing we could do would be to rest as completely as possible, drink pure water, and eat absolutely nothing. Because when we do that, the body goes through a series of beneficial physiological changes. And as a result of those processes the body's going through, it is able to cleanse and heal itself at a highly accelerated rate. And so, for instance, we've taken more than 2,000 people through this process over the last nearly 15 years, and we've seen 100% success with hypertension. Now, high blood pressure leads to coronary problems, and in fact, I have to admit, when you said cancer was the number one killer in the Western society, I wasn't aware that it had shifted, because it's been gaining on heart disease for years, but heart disease until recently was still number one. So it may well be that cancer has surpassed it, but heart disease is still way up there, and hypertension is a huge contributor to that. You can completely eliminate your hypertension and your heart disease. We've seen 100% success with type 2 diabetes, which is another very common problem, and it's something that nobody has to suffer from. Nobody needs to take medication for the rest of their life. What they need to do is get their body clean, get their body more efficient, and then eat the foods that belong in their body and learn how to meet all of their body's physiological needs. And anybody can enjoy an incredibly high level of health if they're willing to do what they need to do.
Mm-hmm. As opposed to what the average consumer does now, which is shovel dump truck loads full of food into their gurgling maws and sit back and do absolutely no exercise, and then
That's
be
right.
worried about why they're getting so ballooned out of control. And then what we've got here now, reporting from the Daily Mail, McDonald's is now going to be introducing statin drug burgers.
Oh, that's a great idea. That's a great idea.
You
know, just eliminate that extra step. Why wait and have to go home and take that statin drug? You're going to need it if you're eating that food, so you might as well. In fact, food's really being kind of generous. If you're eating that crap, you're going to need it, so why not have it included in the substance? But, you know, that's the thing. I mean, many people actually would prefer, it seems, to just keep taking these magic bullets that their doctors offer them. And what they don't understand,
in fact, they're just closer to just taking bullets rather.
Yeah, they might be just as well off. I mean, the thing is, these drugs are all toxic, and you know, it's an amazing thing to me, although I understand that most people just never think about it in these terms. But if you think about this for a second, how could you take something toxic and expect it to make you healthy? It's never going to happen. What drugs and even medicinal herbs do, what they do is they suppress the symptoms of disease so that you feel better. Your symptoms go away and you feel better. What people need to understand is that the symptoms that we experience throughout our lives are evidence that the body is cleansing or healing itself. If we eliminate the symptoms by suppressing them, all we're doing is making it impossible for our virtually infinitely intelligent bodies to do what they need to do. We're not helping anything. We might feel better temporarily, but we're actually becoming more toxic all the time. And so chronic disease is the inevitable result of suppressing acute symptoms.
Indeed. My favorite example of medical drugs suppressing symptoms and then hurting people was during the early 1900s Spanish flu, when I think it was something like 2 or 3% of people chose to go see naturopaths to cure them of the flu, and the rest of the people went to doctors. And most of the people who went to doctors, or at least a very large percent of them, were the fatalities, and 1% of the people that went to naturopaths were fatalities. fatalities. Reason for this being that medical doctors, in an effort to suppress the symptoms of fever, which burns out viruses from the body, they gave these people what's it called, paracetamol and these kind of things to relieve their fever. Exactly. And as a result, they stopped the body defending itself from the virus and killed them.
That's exactly what happens over and over again. And, you know, in fact, the evidence is clear if you look for it. For instance, there have been three or four times in human history where doctors went on strike nationwide. It happened in Denmark. It happened in various places. And every single time that happens, the death rate goes down in that country. Doctors aren't working, fewer people die. It's true. You know, in fact, most people don't know this, but 25 or 30 years ago, heart disease was the number one killer, cancer was number two, and stroke was number three. Well, stroke has moved down to number four. Number three now is something called iatrogenic disease. And that's a word that most people have probably never heard of. But iatrogenic disease means the mistakes of doctors in medicine. So doctors and their drugs kill more people than anything besides cancer and heart disease.
Indeed. In New Zealand, our medical establishment, according to the medical establishment, is the third leading cause of death. And the news, of course, only reports on the amount of car accidents every single time that somebody dies, as if it doesn't kill one third of what the medical society does. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. My very special guest is Lauren Lockman from the Tanglewood Wellness Center, and we will be right back after the break. Welcome back to the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show with our Will on American Freedom Radio and, incidentally, the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. That's Vinnie with a Y because it's the most important question, apparently. My very special guest is Lauren Lockman coming at us live from the Tanglewood Wellness Center. Welcome back.
Thank you, sir.
Now, I wanted to talk about Codex Alimentarius a little bit with you because, it's a very important issue, and they were supposed to implement it in 2009. That's been pushed back. And now what I've noticed is that little elements of Codex Alimentarius legislation through the UN are now making it into separate pieces of legislation that are being passed in places all over the world. SR51, for example, seems to be a prime candidate for this, and indeed in New Zealand, similar legislation is being passed as well. What's the whole goal here?
Well, as you stated earlier, I really believe that the goal is to control people and keep people down. You know, you keep people sick, you keep people from thinking, you keep people confused, and the people that on the planet that control everything are able to continue to do that without anybody really challenging them.
And there's those out there who say, oh, there's no such thing as a ruling elite. And to those people I say, okay, does David Rockefeller exist? Does the Rothschild family exist? Yes, they do. How much do these people own? Like 90% of the world's wealth. So who's in control of the world then?
Yeah. No, exactly. Exactly. I mean, what I talk about is how, you know, the U.S. government was bought and paid for by big industry a long time ago. You know, it may not look that way to most people, but the fact is that what politicians push is based on who's giving them money, who's funding their campaigns, who's making it possible for them to keep in their cushy jobs. And that's, you know, there are exceptions. There are exceptional people out there, but unfortunately not very many of them. And so this is how most of it happens and probably has for a long time.
Oh, yeah. Totally. I mean, the prime example for that, the thing that really just kind of stuck in my mind was when I had a look at the two candidates of the last U.S. presidential election, John McCain and Barack H. O'Barry. and you have a look at their funders, and they're exact same funders. All right?
Exactly.
Merrill Lynch, exactly. All these big international banksters. And guess who funded them twice as much as the other candidate, you know? That's basically what we have to look forward to. The bankers pick the candidates and they fund both of them, but one only half as much of the other. It's clear cut. It's just that simple. And you're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show without Will. And we'll be right back.
I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca Road when along came a semi with a high-end canvas-covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca Mac with me, you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab and then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand, and I said, listen, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man.
Hello, John.
I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts, bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. I travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
I've been to Reno, Chicago, Fargo, Minnesota, Buffalo, Toronto, Winslow, Sarasota, Wichita, Tulsa, Ottawa, Oklahoma, Tampa, Panama, Mattawa, Lava,
yes.
Baltimore, Salvador, Amarillo, Tocopilla, Barranquilla, Anfidela, I'm a killer. I've been everywhere, man.
Welcome back.
I've been everywhere, man. Across the desert, spare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. Travel, I've had my share, man.
I've been everywhere. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, the fastest 2 hours in talk radio, and we are going out everywhere on the live streams at AmericanFreedomRadio.com and the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. If you're tuning in over these live streams, thank you very much for listening, and if you have feedback for the show, email our somewhat fabulous executive producer, Mitch Santel, at afteramerica@gmail.com. That's afteramerica@gmail.com. And in particular, what I really want to see is criticism and preferably abuse directed against myself and the show, because it just justifies everything that we do. Now, speaking of which, now, I was just saying before the break, you know, what can one man do? And, my brother, in particular, I found I had an interesting conversation with him about this. He says, Vinny, you're only one person, you know. What are you going to accomplish, you know? You name me 3,000 people who could actually change the world right now. And I say, well, mate, a waterfall comes from one drop of water, and look what comes from that. So exactly. I feel better doing something rather than being happy with doing nothing, as a lot of people are. But this is not the choice that they've made consciously, in a lot of cases. a lot of people have no idea the way the world is truly run. And indeed, the decisions they make are coerced and conformed into it through the use of a fabulous brainwashing technique called repetition. How many times have you heard the term climate change? How many times have you heard the term global financial collapse? How many times have you heard the term quantitative easing? And it's all total BS, but because it's repeated many, many times, according to Joseph Goebbels, the Nazi propagandist, if you repeat a lie often enough, people will begin.
People accept it.
Mm-hmm. Now, can we blame people for this, though? Because I think that these elements are outside of their control. And you made an interesting point while we were on break, that the repetition can be used on our side as well as the enemy side as well. Because if we keep repeating, the medical establishment will kill you, the medical establishment will kill you, the medical establishment will kill you, eventually it'll sink in and people may or may not stop going to doctors and start making some decisions for themselves that actually benefit their health, rather than just going, oh, let's just enjoy a fabulous little vaccine that'll pump mercury into my brain pan.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, and in fact, I mean, this is you can't really stress this point enough. And if you're listening to this right now, folks, and you're thinking, well, this just sounds crazy. I don't know. I mean, medicine's all I know about. You know, you got to open your mind. You got to understand there's millions of species on the planet and not a single one that's as sick as human beings. The only ones that come close are the ones that humans have taken out of their natural environments and that we take care of and feed. So it's our pets and farm animals and circus animals and laboratory animals. Those animals die of cancer and heart disease and develop arthritis and diabetes just like humans do. But animals in nature almost never do. And there's a reason for that.
It's because they don't go to see a vet.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. We can create incredible levels of health. In fact, if I can offer your listeners a free gift, Vinny, anybody listening that would like to learn more about this, feel free to send an email to info@tanglewoodwellnesscenter.com. And that's the American spelling, E-R rather than R-E, if you're in the UK or New Zealand or Australia. info@tanglewoodwellnesscenter.com. And just a note that with your name and a request for a free report entitled Fasting, Nature's Fountain of Youth, and we'll send that off to you, and it will explain to you exactly what you need to do to create an incredibly high level of health. And what comes with that is thinking more clear. In fact, the benefits are really myriad, because most people, you know, think, well, okay, there are some things that you can't fix, though, right? I've got bad eyesight. That's not going to change. That changes all the time. There's an old saying, a nautical saying, that a rising tide lifts all boats. And the fact is that when you improve the overall health of the organism, you improve every aspect of the organism's health. And so there's no reason, you know, literally, that you can't function at a higher level than you've ever functioned at in your entire life.
Unless, of course, you believe the brainwashing of the government, in which case, this is falling on deaf ears.
Well, exactly. If that's the case, then you probably are screwed. And, yeah, good luck.
Yeah. Just go back. Drink some aspartame and some fluoride. get some flu shots every year. Enjoy your Alzheimer's.
Exactly.
Actually, you won't be aware if you're enjoying your Alzheimer's or not because you forget. But,
but you know, I'd like to come back to what you were talking about a few minutes ago. Because you were talking about how people are just not aware of what's going on, but that it's not their fault. And I completely agree with you. You know, it's easy to blame people, and I mean, I think again, everybody has responsibility, right? There's no victims. We're making choices all the time. And if you're listening, sitting here listening and thinking, well, this is interesting, while you're having your Big Mac and large fries and chocolate shake, and you're thinking, well, this is interesting, and you continue doing the same behavior, then don't expect anything to change. And that's called complacency. If this sounds interesting to you, then you owe it to yourself to check it out. In fact, you owe it to your children and your grandchildren, because what we're doing right now isn't sustainable. I mean, you know, forget about the New World Order for just a second. Let's just talk about the fact that the way the lifestyle choices that people are making, especially in the United States, is just not sustainable. And there's no reason for us to keep doing that. The easiest one, by the way, is to give up eating animal products, because there is no single industry that causes more pollution, more environmental destruction, uses more electricity, destroys more natural habitat and resources than growing animals for food. And so if you're, you know, if you care about the environment, there's an easy thing you can do is change your diet to something that's healthier, both for you and for the entire planet. Great law of the Iroquois Confederacy said, in every action we take, we should consider the impact on the next seven generations. Now, I would suggest that most people don't consider the impact on the next 7 minutes, let alone the next seven generations. If we did that, if we did do that, we'd be living in a completely different world today. And although some people say, well, it's too late, you know, there are certain things that we can't reverse now, I don't know if that's true or not. As you said earlier,
that's a self-defeatist attitude.
Well, it is. Exactly. You know, I mean, listen, maybe that's true. I don't know. But you know what? I'm still going to do everything I can do, because, I mean, what if it's
not
true?
Alternative? What's the alternative to doing something? Oh, I'm going to do nothing and let the bulldozers, you know, rush off on top of me.
if we don't do whatever we can do, then we're definitely screwed. Right. And we're causing that to ourselves. So that's completely unacceptable as far as I'm concerned. And what I would say is, take, you know, every interaction that we have, in fact, even when we're not speaking to somebody, right, our presence is having an impact on every other organism, not just humans, that we encounter. And so the best thing that we can do is to begin taking complete responsibility for ourselves, for our own lives, for who we're being, and for the footprint that we're leaving on this planet. As I said before, we can live on this planet much more gently than we are now. You know, we can begin to consume far less resources than we do now. We can get those tomato plants in the ground now before the government makes it illegal to do so. And, you know, start becoming self-sufficient. Start eating high-quality food, which is available to everybody if they're willing to put out the effort to create it. There are things that you can do almost regardless of where you live. And the truth is, it's much easier in the tropics than it is in, you know, up in Minnesota, or God forbid if you're up in northern Canada or someplace. You know, that's a hard place because you can't grow much most of the year. But there are things you can do even there. Take responsibility. Start looking for ways that you can make improvements for yourself, for your own health, for the health of the planet. And then as you begin to shift yourself, as your own energy shifts, what happens is you become light and you begin to have a positive impact on people. You uplift people. And so people around you, you'll be amazed at how many people will start wanting what you've got, will start asking you how they can accomplish what you've accomplished. In fact, to be honest with you, that's what happened to me. I started out in the financial industry. I've got a degree in finance, and most of my master's degree in finance, I gave up on it because I realized it wasn't what I wanted to do anymore. But after I got my own health taken care of, people would just come up to me and say, "Man, you look amazing. What do you do?" And I started coaching people, and this was almost 20 years ago. And I did it for 5 or 6 years before realizing that if I was going to keep doing it, I needed to start charging people, because I was spending more time helping people get healthy than I was running the business that was supposed to be paying my bills and wasn't doing such a good job at that anymore, as I was neglecting it. You know, it's just about sharing what you have, and the best way is to become an example. So,
speaking of an example, there's an example right there about modern business. I was having a discussion yesterday with somebody, I forget who it was, that if you want to do business in this day and age, often the best way to successfully conduct your business is to be dishonest and to sell a product that is crap.
Well.
But however, if you are honest and you sell a product that's good, mate, you won't be in business long.
Well, you know, unfortunately, lots of people seem to believe that. But it's definitely not the case. It's you know, you don't have to be dishonest. There are in fact, I would say the truth is eventually that will catch up with you. And if what you're offering is a high quality product or service and you are honest and you're really looking out for people's best interests, then ultimately you will succeed. You know, there are certain things you have to, I mean, you can't be stupid about it, but you have to do certain things to succeed in any business. To be honest, we're so busy for so long that I got a little complacent and stopped marketing, stopped traveling and speaking. I used to spend a lot of time traveling and speaking, giving lectures and seminars all over the world. I used to write for 3 magazines. I was active on internet forums. But after about 6 or 7 years of operating at close to 100% occupancy, I thought, okay, I don't have to do any of this anymore. I can just run the business. And then the world economy started to crash a couple of years ago, and it has affected us a little bit. So, you know, again, that wasn't too wise on my part. And now we're starting to see that reverse. In fact, it's reversing in a big way. We're about to be completely full when we reopen in 2 weeks for our next session. So, you know, if you're honest and you offer a good service, what happens is you'll have lots of supporters. And we see a huge about 75% of our guests coming in are either coming back for a second, third, fourth, fifth. I think so far we have someone who's been with us 7 times, or they're referred by someone who's been there before, and that helps a lot too. And that's possible for anybody that's offering a high quality product or service.
And as a former salesman, I can really attest to that, because when I was operating at my peak efficiency sales performance, 1 out of every 2 cold calls I would turn into a sale.
Wow.
And it was because I was incredibly honest with people. I told them the truth about how badly their phone company was treating them and how much cheaper it is to actually get on with somebody else. And you know, and it does work. Honesty sells. But however, when you're operating at very high levels, like guys like you or I, who are very, very honest and really want to do right by people, we won't wind up as CEO of the World Bank or IMF, will we?
no, we won't. But that's okay with me, because I have no interest in that position anyway. But you're right. I mean, you're absolutely right. I mean, that's in order to succeed in corporate business, you probably do have to be dishonest. You probably do have to. I mean, that world, I don't think, does reward honesty. That's not what it's about. It's, you know, it's about the bottom line, and you say what you have to do, and you say what you have to say, and you do what you have to do to succeed that way. But that has
office politics, a limited payoff, backstabbing and all of that kind of little childish stuff going on. And, you know, when I ask for feedback to the show of people being negative, those are the people that I'm actually fishing for. But unfortunately, I get comments like this: I just have to say that you are the best program on the air. How you can tell the truth and make us laugh and smile all the while we're hearing it is beyond me. Don't ever stop. We love you in Texas. Thanks, Vinny, from Turley in Lubbock, Texas. And I was like, oh, that's goodness sake.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's great. But it goes to show you that, you know, there are people out there who appreciate honesty and appreciate especially what you're doing, because it's true. There are very few people who are willing to tell the truth, and if they do, it's a drag to listen to them, because it all sounds so depressing.
Yeah, well, that's why I like to have a wee bit of a cackle out of it, you know, because like I always say, man, if you lose your sense of humor about all this incredibly serious stuff, you'll just go friggin' nuts.
Yeah, if you lose your sense of humor, you're already dead, or you're dying pretty fast. So I agree with you. You know, in fact, are you familiar with the Serenity Prayer?
No.
Well, it's something that the Alcoholics Anonymous has always used. I don't remember exactly how it goes, but it says something about, you know, grant me the serenity to change the things that I can change, accept the things I can't change. Change the things I can change, and the wisdom to know the difference. And so, I mean, this is something I always tell my clients who are, you know, invariably upset about one thing or the other. It's their health or something going on in their life, whatever it might be. Everyone has issues, right? Okay, well, look, you do what you can do and then relax, enjoy life. Because if there's nothing you can do about something, then why worry about it? I mean, you can't, like, you and I aren't going to change the temperature today. Our choices over time might have some impact on the global environment, but you can't. You wake up today and it's whatever temperature it is. There's nothing you can do about that. So it doesn't make any sense to get upset about it. If you
and you
want
can
to
do
happy,
simple things, you know, like wrap yourself in a blanket or whatever, but yeah.
I've heard of that. I've never tried that. Absolutely. Yeah, of course. Of course. You know, there are things that we can do so that we can be less uncomfortable. But but ultimately, you know, we accept the things that we can't change and forget about it.
Yeah.
Do what you can do and then relax and enjoy life.
Yeah. The world is an insane place. And those are okay, who are okay with that are the crazy ones. Because
that's
in
right.
order to accept or understand insanity, one must be insane. And it's the
yes.
crazy ones who are running around who do not accept society and do not understand it that are truly sane. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with our Will. My very special guest is Lauren Lockman from the Tanglewood Wellness Center in Panama. And we'll be right back after the short break.
Yeah. Tonight we're gonna make love. You know how I know? Because it's Wednesday. And Wednesday night is the night that we usually make love. It's because it's when everything is just right. There's nothing good on TV. You haven't had your social netball team practice, so you're not too tired. Oh, yeah. Sounds like it's all on. You say something to me like, I might go to bed, I've got work in the morning. But I know what you mean. You mean, oh, yeah. It's business time. It's business time.
It's business. It's business time.
That's what you mean. You mean it's business time. Oh.
It's business. It's business time.
Yes, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen.
That's right.
That's right.
We go brush our teeth. That's all part of it. That's foreplay. You go sort out the recycling.
It's frickin' business time here on the Vinnie Eastwood Show, I tells you what.
Next thing you know, we're in the bedroom.
Yeah, it's getting a little bit getting hot in here. My very special guest is Lauren Lockman from the Tanglewood Wellness Center. You got a website there, don't you, mate?
Absolutely. A website is www.tanglewoodwellnesscenter.com.
Oh, well, fair enough. And ladies and gentlemen, you can check him out there and do a whole lot of stuff with him if you can. Final long segment today. What else have we got to talk about? Really, there's a terrible there's a terrible world out there, and dealing with it, I find, is sometimes somewhat of a challenge, particularly when we're surrounded often by scum. But, you know, for some reason, I have this aversion to calling people sheeple or things of this nature, because those are the things that the New World Order describes us as, you know, the chattel and the sheeple. And I find a lot of truthers will actually do this to their own kind, you know? They just be like, oh, well, you're an idiot. You're going to a FEMA camp. And I have real aversion to it, like I say. And you personally, I'm sure you've encountered your fair share of dumbed down slaves. How do you deal with it?
Well, it's challenging. I mean, people often come to me because someone has said, "Hey, you should check this out, or this would help you." And they get there, and they're often, you know, very much in resistance. And so, it's partly about repetition. It's partly about trying to get through with common sense. And to be honest with you, I mean, what I've come to realize, and this has been a little bit hard for me, to be honest. I mean, 15 years ago, you know, I really wanted to help each person change, and I was determined to see that happen. And what I realize now is, look, all you can do is offer people a gift of this knowledge, this information. You know, whether we're talking about freedom, we're talking about the truth, we're talking about truth around health, whatever it might be, you can offer them a gift. And then they're going to do what they want to do with it. And there's really not much else that you can do. You can keep offering. You can keep putting it out there. And, of course, again, you know, what, you've got yourself an amazing platform here because you're able to reach a lot of people who are listening. And but the people that are coming because they choose to. The people that are absolutely convinced you're a crackpot, and I'm sure there's a few of them, just as I have my my people. They're either listening just to have a good time and laugh, or they're not. They're never going to listen. So that's okay. You know, it's self-selected, and everybody affects everybody around them, as I said before. So you know, you keep doing what you can do. Sometimes it's not giving up on people, but it's just understanding that you can't force somebody to see what they don't want to see. And a lot of people, I think, are in denial because they're comfortable staying where they are. The truth can seem pretty scary to people. You know, you take away everything that they thought they could rely on, and it seems pretty scary. And so some people just aren't coming along no matter how much sense you make. You know, I've noticed, I mean, we'll have guests go home. They've completed a 21-day fast. They look amazing. You know, if you look at them, you'd say, "Oh my God, what, you look incredible." People will say things like, "You're too skinny." They'll focus on one thing, because someone will have lost weight clearly, and they'll focus on that. Or they'll say, "Well, what did you do?" And someone will say, "Well, I fasted for 21 days." "Oh, well, what did you eat?" No, "I fasted. I didn't eat anything. I just drank water." And they'll say, "No, you didn't do that. That's not possible." And so they'll actually believe what they're choosing to believe or what they've been brainwashed to believe, whether it's in this arena or some other one, the one you're more active in perhaps, because that's where they're comfortable. And they're not comfortable going someplace else. You know. So again, folks, I would say for those of you listening, you got to be willing to get uncomfortable. All growth happens outside of your comfort zone. If you stay in your comfort zone, there's no growth happening. It's just never going to happen. So be willing to push the boundaries. Be willing to inquire. Be willing to look and open your mind. And you don't have to accept everything that people tell you. That's what's gotten us into the situation we're in now, people doing just that. You know, the idea is to start thinking critically. Look at the statistics. Look at the facts. What you were saying earlier, you know, both candidates are funded by exactly the same people. What does that tell you? I would say, well, there's only really one party in the United States.
Yep. It's the big banker, "We're going to rape your country and steal all your assets" party. But they exactly. But they don't call them that, because yeah. And in fact, one election I actually do want to start up a joke political party, which is the enslave you all through banking party. You know,
it's a good idea. It's a good idea. Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, again, I'm sure you probably have gotten into the income tax legislation in the United States and the Federal Reserve Bank. You've probably talked about those things plenty of times before, but. I talk to people about these things, and they just don't believe it. They don't want to believe it. The evidence is all there. It's easy to check it out.
And running back to, I had a conversation with a Texan 2 nights ago, in fact, and he's a George Bush supporter and all of this kind of stuff, saying that the naked body scanners are good for security, you know, that it was just totally brainwashed. And and I said, okay, well, where does the United States money come from? And he goes, "Oh, well, you know, it's taken from taxes and doing all of this." And I say, "No, it comes from the Federal Reserve." And he goes, "No, it doesn't." And I said, "Okay, you just don't know then. Have you heard of the Council on Foreign Relations?" "No." "Have you heard of the Bilderberg Group?" "No." Have you know, and he just lists through all these things, doesn't know. And I say, "Okay, well, would you like me to tell you how your country is run? Because I can." And in between telling him and all of that kind of stuff, I still encounter this fledgling denial, right?
Yeah,
and with truthers, I find the most hard thing to deal with as a truther is the effect that these types of discussions and arguments have, particularly with family, because family ties can be very strong. But these conspiracies and all of this kind of stuff, they break families up something chronic a lot of the time. You know, my uncle, for example, is an engineer, watched half a dozen 9/11 documentaries made in 2006, none of which delve into the conspiracy aspect, of course, but they look at the elements of controlled demolition, things of this nature, and he says, no. those buildings went down because of planes. And I say, okay, well, they didn't actually go down because of planes, because they were designed to be hit by not one, but two 767s, the largest jet airliner at the time. And he says, oh, well, it was the fire then. And okay, all right, well, you like barbecuing stuff, don't you? And he goes, yep. Did the barbecue explode into atomized particles?
Right.
Yeah. No, but the planes took those buildings down. You know, it's just this ultimate denial, and more or less the anger really comes out. And this is what I really dislike about being a truther. You know, I mean, I don't have to be happy about every aspect of the lifestyle that I choose to live in, but that's the main aspect, is that when you try to really get to people and you do it out of love, they get angry with you.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. And you know what? I mean, that's a big problem for a lot of people. But you know, I tell everybody, look, you got to take complete responsibility for yourself, and you can't take responsibility for anybody else. And so, if someone gets angry when you speak the truth, it's just not your problem. I mean, you know, you want to speak your truth as lovingly and gently as you're capable of doing in that moment. For me, sometimes that's more so than other times. But you want to do the best you can to be as loving and gentle as possible. But you always want to speak the truth. And if someone has a problem with that, it's not your problem. It's their problem.
And I find that if you're, say, emotional like me, I'm a pretty emotional guy, you know, very in touch with my feminine side, as they say.
Oh, you were crying while we were on the break there just a little while ago.
I know. No. But that's the thing. It actually hurts, you know, real pain I feel when I have this kind of denial wall up against me, you know. And I find that this is not an isolated incident, particularly when other truthers are dealing with family members, is that they experience a large degree of emotional instability as a result, a direct correlation with the truth. And back in the day, when I used to believe that, you know, doing business honestly was something you could do without being put out of business by dishonest scumbag, filth mongering bankster scumbags, you know, it actually really broke my heart to learn the truth, that the world is not as we see it. It's as a whole bunch of banking scumbags have chosen to make it.
Yep. Yeah. True. It's true. And it's, you know, it's a challenging thing, not just for you, but for a lot of people. In fact, you know, again, I had a very similar kind of response, and it's not that it's not painful to me now. It's a little bit less painful, but I have a good friend who is an amazing psychologist, and she says the most difficult thing that anybody ever experiences is the helplessness you feel when you're you know, you're seeing people doing things, believing things, thinking things, whatever, that.
Well, sorry, we seem to have lost him there.
Who's actually going off?
Oh, there we go. Sorry, we missed what you said just then. Could you start again?
Sure. I was talking about how when, first of all, it's a common experience, I think, for us to feel pain, because I have a friend who's an amazing psychologist, and she says that one of the two most painful things, most difficult things for anybody to experience, is the helplessness we feel when we see somebody that we care about doing something, believing something, you know, whatever it is, that you know is detrimental to them. And that's a painful thing, because you want to help, you want to see them do better, but there's really nothing you can do about it.
It's absolutely true. And the whole aspect of there's nothing you can do about it, I again have an aversion to that, because I believe there's always something you can do. But doing something and solving the entire problem is two very different things. And I find that people try, especially young truthers, get away on themselves, and they think, you know, I'm going to change the world. I'm going to get the truth out there. I'm going to do the street actions. I'm going to pass out these flyers, and the whole world's going to know 9/11. Was an inside job, and they realized relatively soon that it is not possible to tell the world that 9/11 is an inside job, all on your own. And it is, and it is not your individual actions by themselves that matter quite so much. It is the collective actions of all of the different truthers. And this is what I find really cool about hanging with truthers and having a lot of them as my good friends, because they are the coolest people you will ever meet.
Yeah.
You know? Totally, because it's just no BS with them, and they have these things that I believe haven't existed since the 50s. Honor, respect, dignity.
Yeah.
You know, and it's pouring out of them, you know, it's great. But at the same time, they're people who are, incredibly internally conflicted because of just the nature of the information, I guess.
Well, sure. The information you're talking about creates huge conflicts for people, because again, when you're, you know, most people don't want to have internal conflict, but to believe the truth puts people in a very painful place, because it goes against everything they've always believed.
But belief, and this is my personal belief, is that everything I know to be true is in fact wrong. All right, so that way I'm operating under a cover my ass dragnet kind of scenario, where if somebody comes up with new information which conflicts with mine, provided it checks out, I will change my entire life on a dime, pretty much, because I guess maybe I've learned to do that as a coping mechanism, because nobody's got a monopoly on the truth. Anybody who thinks that they know all the truth, the whole truth, and whatever aspect it is, just can't be right 100% of the time.
You're absolutely right.
A god.
absolutely true. Yeah. And you know, and what you said makes a lot of sense. But you said something that was really key, critical to the conversation, because you said, if it checks out. See, what a lot of people do is they hear something that sounds radical, and then they jump on it, but they haven't checked it out, and a lot of it is nonsense. So it's important to check things out. It's important to, at the very least, and this is challenging for a lot of people. But I was talking with a friend just last night before last, and I was telling her, listen, just listen to your intuition. She's like, well, I don't know if I trust that. You know, the thing is, we've become divorced from it, but I believe everyone's born with perfect intuition. And if we hear something, if we really check it out and are willing to trust our own inner guidance, we'll almost always be completely accurate, whether something's true or not true. But you know, so for most people, that's not going to be enough, because they're not really in touch with that well enough to use that as the only guide. So do a little homework, check it out, see what's out there. Keep listening to the show. If you're new to the show, keep listening, because there's great information here. And when Vinny says something that you're going, well, that's hard to believe, check it out. See what's out there. There's great material on 9/11, for instance. You know, the engineers who talk about the fact that it would be impossible for the steel to melt in a fire created by airline fuel. It couldn't happen. Steel melted in those buildings. There was something else going on. That something else was bombs that had been previously placed there. Anyway, the facts are overwhelming, but so many people would just rather not look at them because they're painful. You know, it's difficult for people. It takes them out of their comfort zone. It makes them deal with a reality that's too difficult for them to handle.
You know, and it's like James Burns from the fabulous show that's on previous to this, Freedom Files. He calls those people jellyfish, okay, because they're spineless and they kind of float on the currents of whatever's going. You know, and they're almost irrelevant to the workings of the world. And this is what I find is the difference. And I don't want to sound elitist here, but some people do something about it, and most people will not. I mean, take the American Revolution, for example. According to Doc Bean, and I'm sure he's backed up his research here, in the Revolutionary War, 30% of people opposed the king, so not a majority by any means, and only 3% fought in the Revolutionary War. So it is indeed quite rational to assume, even, that small amounts of people who are determined in their cause can make enormous amounts of difference. And those people who choose to not accept that fact are the ones who have believed the propaganda that's been pumped out to them, that you are insignificant, you are not rich, you are not smart, you can't figure things out for yourself. And these are the things that social Darwinists absolutely love, because it allows them to control people like the average person controls a car.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It's a good analogy, too, because most people are about as conscious as their car. But, you know, the fact is that all change that's ever occurred was initiated by one person or by a small group of people, and that a small group of people can always – I mean, that's the only mechanism that's going to change anything. It's certainly never going to happen by popular vote. It's never going to happen by majority. The majority, I told you I had a background in finance. And the first there's a theory of investing called contrarian investing. And it says just do the opposite of what everybody else is doing. Because the fact is the herd is usually wrong. So if you do what you know the opposite of what everyone else is doing, you'll usually come out ahead. And that holds true in almost any human endeavor because of the fact that by the time most people glob onto something, if it was ever true, it's not true anymore. You know, if it was ever the right action, it's no longer the right action because they're just too slow. But a lot of what people are believing was never true. It was always just brainwashing. And so, you know, again, folks, take responsibility. Check the stuff out. It's amazing. And, you know, I want to bring it back around. I'm not sure. It looks like your show is not on for too much longer, I think, right?
About 6 minutes or so.
Okay, so I want to get a last plug in here to remind people, because it's so easy for them to be complacent with regard to their health. But the fact is, the average person, my age, I'll be 50 before long, the average person at 50 in the U.S. is taking 3 prescription medications every day. And if you're only taking 1 or 2, doesn't mean you're doing all that much better. I mean, you know, the fact is that people are suppressing their symptoms and getting sicker and sicker every day. In fact, I'd like to share with you a couple statistics, because there was a book published probably 15 years ago called Your Body's Many Cries for Water. And it was written by an MD in the Washington, D.C. area who lobbied the National Institutes of Health for years because he'd had decades worth of research treating people with all kinds of diseases and getting them well by getting them rehydrated. Now, he was using a typical medical approach of treating the symptom only. He wasn't asking, why are people dehydrated? He had people drinking tons of water and consuming salt with their water. And salt is toxic to the body. But what that does is it forces the body to retain water, and osmotic pressure forces some of that water into the cells. So you do get people better hydrated that way. And he saw amazing things happen. It's not a good long-term strategy, and it's not the best way to do it. You can get people hydrated by getting their bodies clean and giving them an ideal diet. But, you know, it's an interesting thing, Vinny, because the average person coming into my center, and as you can imagine, you know, the people who are listening right now while they're sitting in the McDonald's parking lot on their car radio, these people are probably – they're not coming down to the Tanglewood Wellness Center. The people that show up at my center are people who are already interested in their health. They're already trying to make healthy choices, and many of them drink lots of water. Well, over the last 4 years or so, we measure every incoming client's level of hydration as well as their percentage of body fat. And, you know, we check all their vital signs every day, but once a week we check these things. The average person coming in comes in at 51.9% water, 51.9% hydration. Human body should be 75% hydration. So the average person's walking around roughly one-third low. And virtually everything we think of as aging is almost completely attributable to long-term chronic dehydration. This is why our eyesight goes. This is why we shrink. This is why our skin gets wrinkled and loses elasticity, becomes thin. This is why we stop thinking clearly. All these things are directly related to long-term chronic dehydration. And what I found over the last 15 years is there is a surefire way to increase anybody's level of hydration. Get the body clean. Get all the toxins out of the body. Get old, hardened wastes out of the digestive tract. And eat properly. And what happens is hydration goes up, and the average, back when we were doing the 14-week internship program, we would see people go from 52, just under 52%, to just over 73% hydration in 4 months' time. Anybody can accomplish it if they know what to do. Let me just say again, you know, as my thank you for listening and opening your mind and being on this show tonight, send us an email. Send an email to info@tanglewoodwellnesscenter.com, and I'll be happy to send you a free ebook called Fasting, Nature's Fountain of Youth. And I absolutely promise you, if you're willing to do what you need to do, you can completely change your level of health and vitality. If you think you're doing okay, I just got to tell you, most people have no way to gauge it because they don't know what's possible. At almost 50, I have more energy, more strength, more vitality than I did when I was 18 years old. And I wear the same size pants. You know, most people think that as you get older, you get bigger. There's no reason for that. Your skeleton hasn't changed. Why should you be any bigger? So you can do exactly the same thing. You never have to worry about your weight. You never have to think about it or focus on it. If you make the best choices, it takes care of itself. Okay, you exercise not to try to manage weight, which is what most people do, but because you have to build a strong body. You have to create proper body composition for your body to work well. But once you get there, it's easy to maintain it. Just like animals in nature who don't exercise, they don't work out. They just live their active lives and they stay strong and flexible. And, you know, again, it's hard for people to imagine, but I'm telling you, anybody that wants to, that's willing to do what they need to do, and there's going to be some time and some investment to make, but it's a one-time thing. And what you can do is you can create a level of health and vitality you never, ever thought was possible before. And when you do that, your mind works more clearly than it has for a long time. You're going to start to see things. You're going to start to understand how things work. And you're going to be amazed at the shifts. So, folks, if you're experiencing headaches or stomach aches or back problems or any unpleasant conditions whatsoever, you don't have to. I haven't been sick a single day in over 23 years. And there's no reason anybody can't experience exactly the same thing.
And that's why they call it your health, because it's your responsibility, not exactly somebody else's. I'd like to thank you very much, Lauren Lockman, for coming on the show today. And hopefully you'll come back on in future.
I'd be happy to, Vinny. It's been a pleasure.
All right, there he goes, Lauren Lockwood from the Tanglewood Wellness Center. If you want his free ebook on what you can do with fasting, email him at info@tanglewoodwellnesscenter.com. That's center, E-C-E-N-T-E-R, not R-E, as we spell here in New Zealand. Thank you, folks, for listening to another fabulous edition of the Vinnie Eastwood Show. We'll be back tomorrow, quite likely, unless, of course, the Department of Homeland Security decides to shut us down. See you, folks.